accordance with Israeli and international law in order to protect the rights of the detainees. It has said every death in Israeli regime custody is being investigated and that some of those who had died had pre-existing medical conditions or injuries. And this is what that they are actually lies.
Black and white.
Frente a la crisis general económica, social.
Faced with a general economic, social, and criminal crisis, is Ecuador on its way to overcome them or simply failing in the attempt and even ending as a failed state?
O simplemente a fracasar en el intento e incluso quedar como un estado fallido. Hoy día, el gobierno de Daniel Noboa.
Today, Daniel Noboa's government has undertaken a war against crime,
a la cual acusa de ser terrorista.
He calls criminals of terrorism and cleverly tries to assimilate or present it as the same as the resistance of social movements.
La resistencia de los movimientos sociales. En Ecuador hoy día.
In Ecuador today, a country of almost 18 million inhabitants, we have 5 million inhabitants who live with only $3 a day, and almost 3 million who live on $1.50 a day.
Que viven con $1.50 al día.
And 66% of jobs are informal.
6% de los empleos son informales.
That is the reality of Ecuador.
Noboa, en medio de esta guerra a la delincuencia.
In the midst of this war on crime, Noboa has unleashed a number of privatization actions. For example, in electricity, raising the prices for the population.
Y subir incluso las tarifas de la misma la población. Noboa, en esta guerra contra la delincuencia, ha condonado la deuda.
Noboa, in this war against crime, has forgiven the debt of large economic groups, and yet he has raised or proposed the raising VAT by 3 points at this moment. That will rise to 15%, which is a lot in a country with a dollarized policy.
La guerra a la delincuencia ha traído.
The war on crime has brought his friends from the leadership of the Southern Command, headed by Laura Richardson, to organize the country. The North Americans are there, because today they enter Ecuador without any inspection of their documents, or what they bring. In any case, when they leave, they're not inspected either. That's the agreement they reached. The police and soldiers who arrive in Ecuador, according to what they have agreed, will not have to give any account to the Ecuadorian authorities, even if they commit the most cruel crimes.
Aunque cometan delitos de los más crueles, ninguno.
And they can walk freely in the country. That's the reality.
Esa es la realidad.
The weapons of Russian origin that were in Ecuador. What do you think about that?
¿Qué creen? Se lo pasó Noboa.
Noboa passed them under the Pentagon. That happened also to those of Chinese origin. All are to be sent to Ukraine. A Ukrainian plane belonging to Zelensky landed a few days ago in Quito.
Un avión ucraniano de Zelensky aterrizó hace pocos días en Quito. De cualquier manera.
In any case, sovereignty, independence, and social rights today have blatantly receded in Ecuador. Ecuador is stopping to be a country and is becoming a factory. The problem for us, the Latin Americans, is that the United States is planning for the rest of our continent. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Eduardo Artes. Bien, hoy estamos con
Irene. Well, today we're with Irene Leon from Ecuador, Ecuadorian sociologist, political analyst, and member of the World Social Forum, WFS, since its inception in
2021.
Also a member of the Social Forum of the Americas and the Network of Intellectuals, Artists, and Social Movements in Defense of Humanity. Welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenida a Negro y Blanco.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you in this program, and at this time, I'm at your service.
Irene, ¿qué pasa en Ecuador?
Irene, what is going on in Ecuador? What is the story of criminals and drug traffickers? Is there a power struggle in Ecuador? They attacked a television channel. The same thing is said about the social groups. In many cases, social organizations are accused of terrorism. The topic of conversation is not drug traffickers, but terrorists. What is the foundation of these issues? What is really going on in Ecuador?
What I think the key to this is the condition that Ecuador is in. Since more than 6 years ago, there was a promise of change in Ecuador, change and transformation of the country with a governance and project definition for the country and based on different dimensions of such issues. Ecuador wanted to implement socialism and good life, which has the support of the Constitution. Our Constitution is considered one of the most advanced constitutions in the world. Ecuador was once the second country in Latin America and the Caribbean. But since 6 years ago, the country has plunged into what I call a neoliberal coup. In other words, an attempt to restore neoliberalism to the country at any cost. Since then, our country has been grappling with legal war, political persecution, and judicial and media imposition based on some scenarios. In the end, all this case creates an environment in which politics, definition of the country, and country management within the framework of the provisions of the Constitution remain only in words and on paper. Therefore, in the same period of time, with the opening of the market and the governance of the country, various centers of illegal capital have been established in the country to provide the basis for neoliberal actions. The main focus is close to financial capital because Ecuador is a dollarized country. Ecuador lost its national currency more than 20 years ago, and the US dollar prevailed through Ecuador. Therefore, these conditions have prepared the ground for various money laundering operations and unauthorized transactions. In these transactions, financial capital is transferred. Therefore, this financial flow is related to illegal businesses and is known as financial capital bank. It's very important that a turnaround has taken place in Ecuador and is taking place. In addition to illegal capital, there is the export sector, which is also very important, as well as the international trade sector, where there is also a possibility that illegal capital circulates in these sectors. Also, there are sections related to human trafficking and other trafficking, including drug trafficking. Therefore, I say all these issues to explain that this problem that exists is caused by the structural orientations of the country and the region. In this problem, the proceeds of these businesses, which are considered illegitimate, go into neoliberal and free market activities where different actors and sectors interact with each other, as I mentioned. As a part of these activities and shrinking the government, which is a part of neoliberalism, in Ecuador we see the transfer of power to powerful institutions, factual powers, that I mentioned. So all the trends that we're talking about, including attacks, drug trafficking, and a certain kind of violence that is seen, are caused by the opening of the market doors in Ecuador, the de-governance in the country, and the return of neoliberalism against the Good Life Constitution in Ecuador. The constitution, contrary to this trend, defines Ecuador as a country with a multi-sector and diverse economy, whose production is also multi-sector and diverse. Ecuador plays a pivotal role in the structure of regional integration in Latin America and South America.
Yes, that's correct. We're going to take a short break. I think it became very clear that the root of this problem is the neoliberal system. We'll be back in a few seconds.
Estamos de regreso en el segundo bloque aquí en Negro y Blanco con.
We're back with Irene Leon from Ecuador in Black and White. Irene, so far we feel that the actions taken by the young Noboa government are a clear abuse of the true crime situation.
Del joven Noboa, ya, que hay un aprovechamiento.
You have explained this situation very well, how this situation is connected with large economic groups. Let's be frank that the goal of Noboa is to drag the country into the mouth of American imperialism, that is, to bring the American military and announcing it.
Porque la llegada de las tropas norteamericanas o los anuncios de las mismas.
How should be described the presence of Laura Richardson? What do these agreements mean? 124 projects are planned for this year, and it's supposed to last for 5 years.
24 actividades ya planificadas y van a estar 5 años. ¿No? ¿Cómo se fortalece la presencia militar, policial?
How will these actions strengthen the U.S. military and police presence? In addition to the Manta base issue and the Galapagos becoming some kind of natural aircraft carrier, it seems they're taking advantage of this economic crisis, a crisis of crime, economics, privatization, increased VAT, etc. What else is in this?
Económica, privatizaciones, subida del IVA, etc. ¿No hay algo más en esto?
I think you touched on one of the central issues that is happening in Ecuador. We're not alone in our own country, and part of what is happening is due to differences regarding the country's model and orientation at the domestic level, which is related to the international geopolitical environment. But the United States is a very important player that has a geostrategic agenda for the region as well, for Latin America. In this framework, Ecuador has its own interest due to its geopolitical position and being located in the middle of the globe and benefiting from preferred ports in the Pacific Ocean due to several factors. And in addition, it is considered a key country for the new geostrategic arrangement and the hemisphere proposed by the United States. Therefore, the changes that have been taking place in Ecuador since 6 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, have a close relationship with the alignment of foreign policy with U.S. strategy and geostrategy. There are several examples in recent years. For example, the U.S. Senate approved the law related to the government of Ecuador, which is called the Cooperation Act between the United States and Ecuador, a law to rule another country. The United States passed a law for Ecuador that covers all areas of life in our country, not only international relations, but also geopolitical order, security, defense, political management, and others. This is an important precedent. This law was passed in December 2022. Then during this process, we saw a diplomatic, or as you said, a military offensive, Southern Command. and what happened a few days ago in Ecuador are examples of this. Therefore, here we see the deployment of military force, which is against the Constitution, because the Constitution has introduced Ecuador as a country of peace without the presence of military bases and military aggression, especially foreign bases. Even in national definitions, the culture of peace is emphasized. Now, in such a country, a very detailed military cooperation agreement is signed. With the military agreement between the United States and Ecuador in October, there is no more talk of one, two, or three military bases. It's about handing the country over to intelligence operations and diplomatic exercises. In this agreement, it's guaranteed that all operations, personnel, intelligence services, etc., will have diplomatic immunity and will be subject to American laws, despite the fact that they're in Ecuador. It is difficult for me to explain this issue because it is both in the approved law, which we mention as an unprecedented case, that a law is approved in the United States to govern Ecuador, and in the military agreements, because this is not the first agreement. It is said that they're conducting an experiment of a new type of American protectorate, which bypasses the country's laws, constitution, and international agreement in this model in order to direct the country to another destination and another role, which is within the framework of foreign geostrategic design. So that's the path that Ecuador is on, and without a doubt our recent experience as a country has been a lifetime of chaos. We have the numerous moments of unprecedented, unexpected, and even most unjustified chaos, followed by offers of security. In other words, leaving national sovereignty and becoming a client of private commercial packages of security models like what we currently have in Ecuador. Therefore, what we are witnessing is clearly our concern, because our country, which is defined on the basis of sovereignty, is becoming a protectorate. This is worrying. Another worrying issue is that the country has gone as far as declaring a civil war. That is what the president of Ecuador has announced. He has the military support of the Southern Command, the regime of Israel, and the government of Ukraine. He received a military plane from this country, which is an American aid received this week. This is an international invasion against a Latin American country that includes a declaration by CELAC, Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which declares the region a land of peace. They brought the country into an unexpected military situation. In fact, numerous riot and violence tactics have been implemented in Ecuador with the aim of offering settlement packages to it.
Aplicaciones de tácticas de violencia y de caos para luego ofrecer también paquetes de solución.
Así es, para ir acercándonos ya al final.
Yes, that's right. What has been the reaction of the Ecuadorian people, the people who have established various movements?
¿Qué pasa con la CONAIE, es decir, con las organizaciones indígenas?
Where is the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Secondary Students of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Students, Trade Unions, National Union of Teachers? I mean, we have witnessed large demonstrations since the past.
Ha visto grandes movilizaciones, ¿no? ¿Y qué pasa con las fuerzas democráticas?
What happened to the democratic forces or patriotic forces? In such a difficult situation for Ecuador, what are the conditions of these groups?
Eso puede ser.
This could be a bad example, as you explained, and the path that they set for all of Latin America.
América Latina, como tú lo has explicado.
Así es. Mira, creo que estas tácticas de sembrar el caos.
Yes, that's right. I believe that these techniques of developing chaos and intimidation of people, especially in the case of Ecuador, which until recently was known as the axis of peace in the region, will lead people to an unexpected reaction. For example, the fear that is instilled through really effective media work against these threats has an impact on ordinary people and on the economy and on all aspects of life. And without a doubt, it cannot be denied that the people of Ecuador are intimidated. For example, since the declaration of civil war under the heading of terrorism, which targets the smallest common criminal and the biggest leader of drug trafficking, there's been confusion in the country, and people want these issues to be resolved so that they can act more freely. When the country stopped due to the declaration of this war, we're facing unusual conditions in all fields. And it is clear that society has many questions. Not only experts, but also common sense says that for the problems that exist in Ecuador, maybe it was possible to solve them with techniques focused on the same issues. Issues such as violent and dangerous acts. It would have been better if we had not declared war across the border and asked for help from the Southern Command and other actors, such as the extreme right-wing government of Argentina, to solve the country's problem. With these talks, the popular and social movement, which is very diverse in our country, was worried and expressed dissatisfaction with the current situation and asked for an explanation. The network of intellectuals defending humanity, the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador, and other institutions have expressed concerns about these conditions, especially because of these declared war conditions. Democratic capabilities are limited.
Time is cruel. For this reason, we say goodbye to Irene Leon, who has an excellent and very powerful presence. Thank you, Irene Leon. This is Black and White.
I should always thank the Black and White program. Thank you. See you soon.
Hasta pronto.
See you soon.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Zionist regime forces have attacked Muslim worshippers at Al-Aqsa during first night of Ramadan. Video footage showed Israeli regime forces beating worshippers walking to prayers at the holy site, while others were forbidden from entering. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iWrote, Israeli regime forces beat and prevented Muslim worshippers from entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds on the first night of the holy month of Ramadan. In video footage shared online, armed Israeli regime police officers are seen hitting Palestinians in the streets of the old city while they were walking towards the holy site to attend Tarawih prayers. The special prayers take place every night of the holy month of Ramadan and typically attract tens of thousands of Muslims who pray in congregation. According to local media, the Zionist regime troops set up multiple checkpoints around the old city in the occupied East Al-Quds, blocking roads and obstructing people from reaching the site. Eyewitnesses said that Israeli regime police only allowed some men and women over the age of 40 to enter the site. The Zionist regime's government had issued a statement on March 5th saying that they would not restrict Palestinian worshippers during Ramadan. Witnesses said that Israeli regime forces stopped and checked the bags of young men and women in the alleyways of the old city. One woman told local media that the number of Palestinians who were prevented from entering Al-Aqsa was more than the number of worshippers who were able to enter and perform Tarawih prayers. She added, "The occupation forces have even prevented any gatherings of Palestinians or prayers in the surrounding areas," referring to Israeli regime security forces. Jordan's foreign minister Ayman Safadi said recently restrictions imposed by the Zionist regime on Muslim worshippers' access to Al-Aqsa was pushing the situation towards an explosion. In his statement, Safadi said his country rejected the Zionist regime's move to limit access to the holy site during Ramadan, citing security needs with war raging in Gaza. He added that Jordan shared the Palestinian view that such restrictions were an attack on freedom of worship. The prevention of worshippers from entering Al-Aqsa comes at the same time that Palestinians in Gaza were forced to pray in the outdoors amidst the ruins, following over 5 months of Israeli regime bombardment and the total destruction of nearly all of Gaza's mosques. Palestinians in Gaza told Middle East Eye that they are apprehensive about the holy month, as over 31,000 Palestinians have been killed in the Strip since October, while another 70,000 have been wounded. The United Nations has also announced that 80% of the Gaza Strip is now uninhabitable, while widespread hunger has gripped the majority of Gaza. At least 27 people have died due to hunger and starvation since the start of the war. "We are now living in conditions worse than the Nakba," Diab Azaza told Middle East Eye, referring to the period when Palestinians were killed or driven from their homes when the fabricated regime of Israel came into existence. He added, "At the time of the Nakba, there were fewer people and the country was open, but now we are besieged from all sides." Press TV earlier reported the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement has warned the Zionist regime not to play with fire after the regime imposed restrictions on access to Al-Aqsa Mosque during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The Gaza-based group said in a statement recently, "Israel is playing with fire through desecration of the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque compound by occupation forces and settler gangs. Besides restrictions on access to the site, we and freedom-loving people will not stand idly by in the face of such aggression." The statement added that Palestinians are creating impressive scenes of steadfastness and determination in the face of Zionist terrorism on the advent of Ramadan and amid the silence of some Arab and Muslim governments. "In spite of this unfortunate reality, the Palestinian Resistance Front is resolute to carry on with its struggle, which is entering its 6 month in a row and is armed with the faith in God." It added, "Congratulations to the entire Palestinian nation, especially the residents of the Gaza Strip, on the arrival of the month of Ramadan. Our resistance will continue and we will carry out strikes and acts of retaliation throughout Gaza and the West Bank." The Islamic Jihad finally reassured all walks of Palestinian society and freedom-loving people worldwide that resistance fighters are at the apex of their combat preparedness and will not allow the Zionist entity to advance its sinister plots against the Palestinian cause and nation. Since the beginning of the war in the Gaza Strip, Israeli regime forces have restricted Palestinian Muslims' access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, particularly on Fridays. The Hamas resistance movement, in a statement on February 19th, also denounced the Zionist regime's plan to restrict Palestinians' entry into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during Ramadan, warning that the measure will explode the whole situation. Ezzat Ar-Reshagh, a member of the political bureau of Hamas, said recently, "An outburst of anger is waiting to go off in the face of the occupying regime in response to any restrictions on worship at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan."
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaa.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabihit tuja wa a'lamit tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about this dialogue of the 10th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. His Eminence is talking about absolute free will and compulsion. What's really interesting is that this discussion is so long because these are very intricate subjects. And if they're not dealt with appropriately and in the proper depth with all the various variables, such as the divinely appointed Imam has done, these are very confusing subjects, and there are subjects in which a person can be led astray. So we finally reached this point where compulsion has been spoken about, and the divinely appointed Imam is talking about free will. Now, when talking about the repercussions of the concept of absolute free will, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he brings up two repercussions or two end results of the idea of absolute free will. The first one being that the people have defeated Allah and they have forced Allah, willingly or unwillingly, to accept their choices. And so what happens here is that because an individual has complete free will, meaning they are able to do whatever they want, then Allah has become defeated. Allah cannot, punish an individual. Allah has no control, has no power over anything. And what this does is this shows that Allah is weak and Allah is not able to authorize and to implement His command and His authority. And in reality, this idea of complete free will, that Allah has no power and Allah is not able to control anything, or Allah is not in the position to be able to make something wajib, which is mandatory, or make something haram, which is prohibited. All of this kind of goes, into air, because of course Allah has to have that power for Him to make something wajib, and He has to have the power and authority to make something haram. Yes, He does not force us in absolute compulsion to do these things. We do these things out of our own free will. But our own free will is within this framework of the overall power and the commandments and the authority of the Almighty Allah. Again, these are quite, profound ideas and concepts that really need to be talked about, more in order to be able to understand. But in the end, we do understand that it is not absolute compulsion, neither it is absolute free will. But as the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and Imam Hadi alayhi salam have taught us, it is a matter between the two matters. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en/call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the Limelight.
Doctors, nurses, and medical staff in Gaza are being forced to treat patients in increasingly dire situations as the Zionist regime continues to block food, water, medicine, and basic supplies with the backing and complicity of the United States. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, over the last 5 months, the Israeli regime forces have destroyed 155 health institutions and rendered 32 out of the 36 hospitals completely or partially out of service, according to Dr. Ashraf Al-Ghodra, the Palestinian Health Ministry's spokesperson in Gaza. Al-Ghodra stated, "The health situation is absolutely catastrophic and cannot be described, and it is getting worse and deteriorating more as a result of the lack of the necessary medical aid." The World Health Organization said that the average bed occupancy rate at Gaza hospitals is almost 300%. For nearly 50 days, the Zionist regime has laid siege to Al-Amal Hospital in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Israeli regime forces have attacked the hospital at least 40 separate times since mid-January, killing at least 25 Palestinians and leaving the facility incapacitated, according to the United Nations. Thousands of patients, displaced families, and medical staff were trapped inside the building for weeks as Israeli regime tanks and snipers surrounded the hospital complex. The UN stated in late February, buildings continue to be peppered by Israeli sniper fire, communications blackouts, and the detention of health workers alongside drastic shortages of essential goods and restrictions on what life-threatening supplies can enter the complex. Al-Amal's manager, Dr. Haidar Al-Ghodra, told the UN that for months, critical surgical cases were forcibly postponed. Al-Ghodra said, "All of these normal operations were not performed in any hospital. Therefore, most of these patients either died or they are suffering more and more." The Zionist regime forces have arrested more than a dozen Palestinian Red Crescent Society health workers, including physicians and ambulance staff from the hospital. Their whereabouts remain unknown. The World Health Organization reports that overall 118 health workers in Gaza have been abducted and detained since October 7th. Al-Ghodra explained to the United Nations that there is no respect for any rule or any humanitarian law related to the medical staff. This week, civil defense workers and PRCS staff reported that they have been trying to control fires that have broken out inside hospital buildings. PRCS warned on March 3rd that medical supplies, medications, and lab equipment are depleted, while drinking water, food, and other essential items for infants and elderly patients are almost gone. The Zionist regime forces have repeatedly attacked and blocked medical convoys to and from Al Amal Hospital. In late February, PRCS and World Health Organization teams evacuated 24 patients from the facility, including a pregnant woman and a mother and her newborn. The United Nations stated, despite prior coordination for all staff members and vehicles with the Israeli side, the Israeli forces blocked the WHO-led convoy for many hours the moment it left the hospital. The UN added, the Israeli military forced patients and staff out of ambulances and stripped all paramedics of their clothes. Three PRCS paramedics were subsequently detained. Although their personal details had been shared with the Israeli forces in advance, while the rest of the convoy stayed in place for over 7 hours. Last month, Chicago-based emergency room doctor Taher Ahmad joined the Electronic Intifada live stream to talk about his recent experience working at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. Since his return from Gaza, Nasser Medical Complex has been completely debilitated by Israel's brutal siege and attacks on the facility, its patients, staff and people sheltering there. Ahmad said, "It was a very, very overwhelming situation prior to any sort of siege. There were people that we were treating on the floor. We were dealing with trauma activation where there were multiple people coming in at the same time because the house had been bombed a couple of blocks away." He said, the doctors there were overworked. They were working 24-hour shifts on, 24 hours off. And then they too were probably sheltering somewhere around the hospital and some of them were staying in a tent right outside with their family. On the March 7th episode of the Electronic Intifada live stream, Dr. Arham Ali, a pediatric critical care specialist, described what it is like to treat the most vulnerable patients inside a hospital in Gaza. Ali, who works at Loma Linda University Children's Hospital in Southern California, recently returned from a 2-week stay in Gaza where he worked alongside doctors and nurses at the Emirati Maternity Hospital in Rafah. Ali said, despite my years of training, my vocabulary does not encompass enough words to describe the atrocities and the devastation that is happening in Gaza right now for these young, innocent children, specifically the newborn population. With few supplies and lacking basic medication, Dr. Ali said that physicians simply cannot provide life-saving care for the many infants who are born premature. He also discussed the long-term physical and cognitive impacts on children due to the Zionist regime's engineered policy of starvation. The neonatal intensive care unit at the Emirati Hospital only has 12 beds. He explained, but physicians have been forced to crowd as many as 40 infants inside those beds. He said, these patients are sharing incubators. They are in shared spaces, which, as you can imagine, is devastating for infection control and for sepsis. Many of the tiny patients Ali treated were born early due to maternal malnutrition, dehydration, stress, and trauma. He said, many of them could have been treated and would have had beautiful lives. We'd see them in adulthood with some assistance. But unfortunately, given the severe lack of healthcare infrastructure due to the severe lack of essential medical supplies and equipment, these children who have survivable injuries now are unable to survive.
32
تومن
یعنی
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time, it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items. Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iwan's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Apar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roaster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports. Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups. High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published